Welcome to Bimmercast number 36. It is November 17th, 2010. Tonight we have the new X1. We're going to be giving you some details you have not heard anywhere on the X1 and when it's coming to the U.S. market. We're going to be talking about the new X5, next generation X5, aluminum chassis, a lot of different technologies and a bit more efficiency. And then we're going to talk about the X6 and the 5 Series Gran Turismo and why they exist. But above all else, and most importantly, we're going to talk about our favorite utility vehicles in the BMW fleet, the wagons, the 5 and the 3 Series wagon, and why they are absolutely the unsung heroes of the entire BMW lineup. Stay tuned. So we are back this week with a couple shows. We're going to have another show actually later today. It's a secret show. We recorded it in a bunker at an undisclosed location, and it will involve secrets known to only us until the moment it is released. How's that? Anyway, my eyes just crossed. We're going to talk a lot about the X series cars, but I want to let those of you know that at the end of it, we're going to talk about wagons. And the reason I'm saying that is there's a lot of folks out there who don't care about crossovers. Stay with us. I promise you, we are going to talk about wagons, and it will be good. That's really about it. But
we might love to talk about wagons.
But let's start with the smallest of the X family. Let's start with the X1. Michael, there's been a lot of talk about the U.S. market. When's it coming? When is it? You know, what engine is it going to have? What price point are we? Are we expecting? What is the absolute latest that we have heard?
Well, Gabe, that keeps changing like the wind, unfortunately. Been hearing for quite some time that it's going to be released in the U.S. May, midsummer, June-ish, May, June launch, and they'll hit the dealerships sometime midsummer. Now I'm starting to hear that they may not come till fall. And the reason for that is there might be 4-cylinder power plants coming this fall, and they won't be ready for spring, supposedly. Our sources are usually spot on with these things, and I'm not sure what's going on these days, but the X1 has been a vehicle that's kind of been teeter-tottering on, is it coming, is it not coming, is it getting a diesel, is it not getting a diesel? Well, I can honestly say that from the launch, it's not going to have a diesel. The U.S. is just not a diesel market at this time, according to the wonderful people in München. So I think, but see, Gabe, now, I think people will like the X1, even though it's an X model, because really, it's just an E91 3 Series wagon on roids. Basically, they gave this thing some juice, jacked it up a bit, and that's it. It's essentially a 3 Series wagon.
But it's a 3 Series wagon that weighs more than a 3 Series wagon, right?
Not and much more than a 3 Series wagon.
A little bit. And the weight distribution is higher off the ground. That's true, I assume.
Yeah, that is factual.
And it is uglier by a factor of 3.
That's true, but Gabe, it is bigger.
Okay, so I can throw one more case of beer in the back. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, you could.
Listen, I don't hate the X1. I typically accept new vehicles. I accept the changes that they make for the U.S. market, or accept the vehicles that they think are going to sell. They're an independent car maker. They have to make money. But for God's sake, it is a downgrade. I cannot stress enough. They're going to sell a boatload of these. They're going to be more successful than the 3 Series wagon. And every single one is going to be inferior to the 3 Series wagon.
Are you calling the American consumer a bunch of idiots?
No, I'm calling them, what's a better term? Uninformed and naive. How's that?
Okay. Or they just get this concept of SUV equals good.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before, you know, being an arms race. And of course, it's a small SUV or crossover, so not really an arms race, so to speak. But, you know, you've got these people who feel like they need to be higher off the ground. Or, you know, there's this element of safety in an all-wheel drive car, which, you know, many times doesn't equal safety, doesn't really equal anything. In fact, many times there's only two wheels turning, only two wheels powering the car. But it's marketing. We know that. This is the shape of the future. This is what it is. So, you know, my rant aside, this is the right choice as far as a market leader. It's just a shame that we can't have the wagon stick around. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. That's out of my system. The X1, I think, is going to be a huge seller for BMW. I think it's also going to be interesting to see this thing up against some of the competition. You know, it's not that big of a car. In fact, it's really not that much bigger than a Mini Countryman. So to see it start off right around 30 and, you know, get it well optioned with the base engine in the mid to high 30s, where you have an X3 that's in the mid 40s now, I think it's going to give you a little bit of value for the money.
I think it's going to be a great value proposition for people looking for an all-wheel drive BMW and wanting four doors.
So am I correct to assume that we will not have a rear-wheel drive X1 at launch in the U.S.?
Well, I think they've learned from their past errors in launching vehicles in rear-wheel drive format only, especially X vehicles. You know, they kind of have this X thing going on with all-wheel drive, and I think if they launched a X1 S-Drive, they might have some confused people on their hands.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, you know, we have an enormous change in the EPA laws. I mean, the efficiency regulations, and I mean, one has to wonder how BMW is going to handle that huge change. I mean, four-cylinder petrol-powered rear-wheel drive X1 sounds very efficient to me.
Yeah, and I bet you it would be like the most efficient vehicle they make in their lineup.
It's sadly true.
Yeah.
So the X1, you know, it's going to be coming. Again, I can't stress enough that aside from my rant, I do actually think it's going to be a pretty interesting vehicle. A lot of folks out there are going to like it. It's going to have utility. It's going to be a little higher off the ground. You know, yada, yada, yada. It's going
to
do.
Actually think it's quite practical, to be honest with you. It's not a big, huge behemoth. Yes, it weighs a little bit more than the 3 Series, but it's actually practical and functional. Something to say the, you know, mighty X6 is not.
Well, let's talk about the X6. Because the X6, to me, is so insanely impractical that I kind of can't help but love it because it's ridiculous. And it's kind of like this thing that has this insane personality that ends up just sort of being lovable.
Like a shag carpet.
Kind of like an old shag carpet. You just love it. It sticks around. It's got a lot of personality. You know what? It's unashamed of what it is. It is something completely new and different. And it is unashamed of the fact that it does have a personality. And it does have an expression. And we talked about this. I wrote about it in my review. You know, you can't help but feel a personal connection to something that is so personal. Because it is a personal expression. I'm not going out and getting the big, you know, 5-seat X5. I'm getting something that is for me. And yeah, it's four doors, but it only seats four, and it's sleek and cool and yada yada.
And a big pain in the ass to back up.
True. They have cameras, though.
Yes, they have cameras, because cameras solve all those problems.
Well, so you wrote a piece on Bimmerfile about it, and tell us about your thoughts on it.
Well, my thoughts on the X6 is basically it's a, wow, look at me, I drive an X6, I'm awesome kind of thing. So really the way I look at the X6, because it's not very practical, it's not very good at, say, fuel economy, it's not great at going to Home Depot, it's really difficult to put, say, I don't know, a bike on the top.
But you could do it. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, they do have...
But compared to the X5, I mean, it's kind of like, sure. Why, you know, it's why would you buy that over that, except for Whoa, it's got a sleek roof.
It's a personal expression for somebody who's looking for an element of style in their lives. That is my best creative director speak right there.
Sort of like someone putting big, heavy chrome wheels on a car?
No, that's stupid. There's a difference.
Okay. I'm confused by that, but yeah, okay.
I really think the X5 is executed in a more aesthetically pleasing fashion. How's that?
That's fine. I mean, to be honest with you, I like the way that the thing drives. I'm not going to knock how the X6 drives. I'm not even going to knock the way the thing looks. I just think you take something that's actually sort of practical in the X5, and you sort of neuter it by giving it four seats, less room in the back, and horrible visibility.
Yeah, visibility is not ideal, but it's you know what? It's better than a Lamborghini Musilago.
Sure, because that's practical also.
No, it's not. fact about the Murcielago, though, the Murcielago is that it is the front compartment, I guess you can call it the trunk, I suppose, is actually lined in leather. And then the X5 or the X6 trunk is not. So in that case, the X6 is much more practical than the Lamborghini. And I think my case is settled.
Sure. Yes, that makes it so much more practical that it has a carpeted rear boot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying.
I completely understand. But I guess my point was that BMW found this niche market, and it's tiny, and yet they built a substantial product for that small, tiny niche market. And then they did the same thing on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. They built something for practicality and functionality and sacrificed looks to most people. I actually think the 5 GT, 5 Gran Turismo, isn't half bad looking, but you know what? I'm half crazy, so.
So, I think it's ugly. I'll disagree with you. And I think the X6 is actually pretty interesting looking, so we're completely at odds here, but let me turn the tables a little bit and completely change. I had a rant earlier about all crossovers and how much I don't like them, but let's think about it differently here. What BMW has done is they have created something that they had a hunch would sell well, and it has, and it's been profitable for them. And you know, it plays in this new space that the BMW brand is now. So it's hard to fault them. It's really hard to fault them for being successful in those two different realms. And I think my perspective is, you know, I can't fault BMW for making something that's stylish and performs well, and for a few reasons, you and I don't really like it, but sells really well. Whereas the wagon, which they want to sell in the U.S., is not selling, and they can't justify importing it anymore. Why is it not selling? Well, I mean, is marketing at fault there? I don't know, maybe a little bit. I mean, I don't really see the X6 being marketed a ton. But whatever, the net is the 5 Series wagon is dead in the U.S., and it's because it has not sold in the numbers needed. And the 5 Series Gran Turismo is completely, like, scorching the earth as far as sales go when you compare it to the 5 Series wagon.
Yeah, it's kind of eye-opening and like, oh my God. But yeah, no, it definitely is. And that's the thing. They designed this vehicle that no one saw coming, and it's selling extremely well. But my argument is, with the piece I wrote, was actually for a small hatch. Not even the wagons. I mean, I just know the wagons are dead, but and they've been building those and just bringing them here, and nobody's bought them, so I can't really say if you bring it, we'll buy it, because obviously nobody's doing that, and that's just...
No, it's crazy. Nobody's going to buy a small... No, it's not going to happen. I mean, you know, BMW sells a small hatch in the U.S., and it's mini, and we've talked about that before. I think where... 2015, things start to change. There's no question about it. But in the United States, BMW occupies a different sector, a different brand, has a different brand standpoint, if you will. than what it does in Europe. And we BMW enthusiasts sometimes have a hard time coming to terms with that. We look at those 123, you know, five-door 1 Series and think, oh, God, if we only had that. But the truth is, you know, there's different economics, you know, at work in Europe. And there's different branding at work. And BMW occupies a different part of European culture than it does in American culture, for better or worse. And, I mean, that's kind of the fact.
But don't you think that there's going to need to be a shift at some point, that BMW cannot just be this big luxury brand in the U.S., or everything's going to be a damn hybrid?
No, I think it will be a near luxury or luxury brand. I think BMW's position in the U.S. will always be one of luxury or near luxury, sport luxury, whatever you want to call it. I think a 120, you know, two-door hatchback is, as it's positioned right now, will not work in the U.S. What makes more sense is a luxury, you know, carbon fiber monocoque electric vehicle that sells for $40,000 and is a hatchback. Like, you know, the brand can bring that to the table probably in a little bit more believable fashion than a $24,000 three-door hatchback.
Yeah, it's always been one of those things. It's kind of like BMW stands for this here, you know, in the U.S., and it stands for that in Europe. I mean, they get cloth, whatever. You can get a stripper car pretty cheap. And it's still a BMW, minus you have a smaller motor and less, you know, gizmos. But in the U.S., you always have to have the bigger motor, all the options and everything. And it's just the way it's been. But, you know, it's almost, to me, if BMW came in and actually built, say, a vehicle to compete with, you know, last show we were talking about the GTI. If they built something to compete with the GTI that was, say, $3,000 more or $4,000 more, you're looking at the 30K price point. And even if it was stripped at 30K, don't you think that would outsell the GTI? Just because of the brand cachet of having a BMW.
You know,
I'm being a little Jeremy Clarkson here.
$30,000. So if I could walk into a BMW dealer and get a one, you said 130.
Yeah, like a 130. Yeah.
So 200 and whatever U.S. trim, 65 horsepower.
Yeah.
130 for $30,000. I really don't know. I think it's going to sell in R32 numbers. I really don't think that, you know. Okay, so that's a stripper. So now you're talking, I need to add a couple options. I'm going to need to, you know, because either I special order it or I pick it up off a lot. So off the lot, it's going to be automatic transmission. It's going to have leather. I mean, next thing I know, it's going to be $35,000 for a two-door hatchback. And suddenly BMW is selling, you know, 1,200 of these a year.
But does the one series coupe really sell that much more? That's where that's what I mean.
I think it does sell more. I mean, if you look at the numbers, I think it does. But, you know, it's more palatable for the U.S. consumer. The U.S. consumer can get their minds around that because they can say, oh, sure, one series coupe. It's like the 2002 or it's like the 320 that my dad had or it's like the 86 325 ES that I had when I was in high school. Or, you know, you start to think about it historically. Okay, this makes sense. I can understand what a 1 Series coupe, because it looks a little bit like this or it feels a little bit like that. Whereas that hatchback comes in the market and it has to go up against that damn 318 Ti that is actually not that bad of a car, but people have these terrible memories of, or they laughed at, because it looks like a 3 Series with the trunk cut off.
Yeah, and that's what it was, unfortunately.
I mean, I've got a good friend who had that car and loved it, and I hate to talk about it like that because it is a good car, but you know, it kind of did some damage to the brand a little bit.
It did, and I think it was also the motor choice. And there are all sorts of issues with that vehicle. A lot of people love them. A lot of people hate them. It's one of those things. So yeah, I mean, I think that failure probably foreshadows what is going to happen to the future. I mean, we will never see a hatch here ever again. And the only reason why I got thinking about all this greatness was, you know, is the A3 parked out in the driveway and how BMW doesn't make anything and I'm forced to go buy an Audi. misery.
It's,
so now I stare at it every single day, and I just vomit a little bit in my mouth, but it's there, it's not mine, and it's fine.
Well,
it'll be traded in on an X1 as soon as the X1 hits the States.
I mean, it's, yeah, it, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's really tough. I mean, you know, we talked about it the other week. BMW, they can't take a lot of chances, yet they have to. So they're calculated risks. The X6 is a shared platform on a car that was already here. Engines are federalized. It all makes sense. Not as much risk. 130, the car hasn't been here before. The engine isn't the updated version isn't federalized anymore. I mean, there's a lot of things that don't really work in terms of numbers.
It's always about numbers, Gabe.
Yeah, it's true. Well, and speaking of numbers, we should talk a little bit about the. I mean, before I forget, the Gran Turismo is ugly, for the record. I think you're crazy, but we should talk about the next generation X5. The X5 has grown over the years. There's been two generations. The first generation was famously designed in 1 month. Interesting story. They actually had to move Frank Stephenson from Germany to, I believe, Switzerland, and the interior designer, and I can't recall his name, and they worked at rented office space. I don't think it was around the clock, but it was pretty. It was being overworked in a way that in Germany would be against the law, and they finished the X5 in about a month and brought it to market. And BMW sold a ton of them. It was a very, very successful car, high profit margins. And it, in some ways, it sort of invented and reinvented what we expected a crossover to be.
Yeah, it really changed the whole marketplace. Drove more like a sports car, air quotes, right, than a truck.
Right, absolutely. So the X5 was created, and all was good. And then the next X5 came. I actually prefer the styling. Interior was really great. Everything was great. Weighed more. Some engine configurations, full package, tipped the scales over 5,200 pounds, so it was an obese vehicle. Had an optional third row, which turns out wasn't or isn't very popular. But nevertheless, it was very successful and has sold better than the previous X5. Now, let's fast forward a little bit. Next generation X5, third generation, what is BMW going to do? We've talked about these EPA regulations. Of course, the U.S. is the largest market right now for the X family of vehicles.
Could that be because we have the widest streets?
Yeah, sure. Widest streets, straightest roads. I mean, you know,
fattest people.
Yeah. You know, it's probably true. But I would like to think that at some point China is going to overtake the U.S. in the X5 arms race, if you will. But regardless, the next generation X5 has a lot to overcome. So what is BMW going to do? What we have heard is that BMW is going to start to integrate aluminum much more in the next vehicle, to the point that the chassis may be made mostly out of aluminum. Of course, the result is reduced weight. The target is reduced weight. And the target ultimately is an improved efficiency. So it's going to be a combination of weight reduction and more efficient powertrains. What's more efficient mean? Well, you could go diesel, or you could go smaller petrol engines, or you could go hybrid. My guess, because the X5, of course, is really marketed to the U.S., designed for the U.S., and ultimately probably China, I believe that hybrid engines or hybrid power plants are going to form a big basis of the next generation X5's offering in the U.S. specifically.
I'm so tired of hybrids. I wish they would implode.
Well, you're going to be a tired, tired man for a long time because they're not going anywhere. I really think that hybrids have a future. I think we're just scraping the surface of what a hybrid is. So I can only tell you, stay tuned. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening. I think Porsche's hybrid system is actually the one of the RSR race cars is really cool. I think BMW has something incredible with the Vision concept car, which we're going to talk about actually next show. And I think the future is very bright. You know, when we talk about hybrids for a huge crossover, not so excited.
Not so exciting. I'm very excited about the aluminum chassis, though, and the possibility of that. Because the E60, the former 5 Series, was half aluminum and half steel and reduced the weight significantly. The problem was with, you know, crashing it and fixing it and all that great stuff. But since then, other manufacturers have really been using aluminum heavily. Audi has, Jaguar, Land Rover reportedly, the next generation.
I mean, let's give credit to where credit's due. I mean, Audi's A8 has been aluminum for many, many years. And yes. Jaguar's XJ has been aluminum for many, many years. I mean, I have to give them credit. Both those vehicles have weigh about the same size as, I'm sorry, about the same weight as their midsize counterparts within each brand. And I think BMW is kind of missed the boat a little bit. I mean, we all, you know, kind of bark about BMW's being overweight. Well, I mean, here's a chance for BMW to change that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the TT actually is already aluminum as well. But aside from that, you know, BMW's had the E60 5 Series and the Z8 was all aluminum chassis. Yeah. But since then, I mean, realistically, BMW's been using high-strength steel and things like that to reduce, and using Bounty panels that are aluminum and aluminum suspension componentry and things like that to reduce the weight and keep the 50-50 balance and all that great stuff. But it's good to see that we're possibly moving to an all-aluminum structure where it becomes significantly lighter.
So, X7, on or off?
I think it's boo.
I think it's dead. I think it's off.
I think it's just they're pondering something for China. What they're going to end up doing, just like they do with the 5 Series, is they're going to end up stretching an X5.
I completely agree. It's going to be a stretched X5. That's it.
Yeah, and get rid of that third row of miniature seats from Porsche.
Yep. It's going to be a stretched X5, and that is that. X3 European Games? What is this?
Awesomeness is what it is, Gabe.
Oh.
You're not a big fan of the outdoor games?
No, I mean, I am. I like the outdoor and I like games, so that would definitely make me a fan of the outdoor games.
So what they're going to have is a variety of, you know, competitions with competitors on teams doing different skills such as driving. I believe there's mountain biking and there's some running and some things like this, and then you can win your very own X3 if your team wins. I think we should do this in the U.S. I think it'd be kick-ass. Right, do it out in Colorado. Fantastic. Sign
Let's
me up.
Do All right. Done and done. So I think we're gonna actually end this one a little early. We are going to be back in a matter of hours. We have some exciting news to cover in just a few hours, and it involves the LA Auto Show and a debut. I would say somewhat unexpected debut, but when you kind of take a step back and think about it, not so shocking. It's going to be a debut of a car that makes a lot of sense in Southern California.
Yeah, and I hope I can get some cell phone service in the bunker.
Yeah, I know. We've got to enter the bunker now. So we're going to record this show. And, of course, it'll be out. So if you're listening to this show, let's say at 10 a.m., 11 a.m., just know that you need to come right back to the site right around 5 p.m. I think it may be 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, roughly, and check out what's coming. It's going to be really cool, and we're going to, of course, have some commentary via podcast. So until then, this is Dave. Cheers.
Michael, first.